Welcome to Dread, Fright, and Brew, where your favorite horror movies are paired with craft brews and ciders from the Pacific Northwest and beyond. Your hosts this evening are Aaron Hatfield, Grace Schrick, and Lee Despain. Fear goes better with beer.
That's an old tactic. Stephanie told me that she used to say, like, I want a pony, when in all actuality she wanted a rabbit.
Yep.
And I'd be like, fuck no, get no goddamn pony. She's like, well, how about a bunny rabbit? And I was happy to get the
bunny rabbit instead of a
so.
Oh, yeah, we're evil masterminds. Huh.
Mm-hmm. Until that goes wrong and you have a pony and you're like, what the fuck am I going to do?
Then you have a pony!
Yeah, but once you reach a certain girth, you can't ride a pony anymore. I can't ride a pony. I'd kill it.
Why do you want a pony anyway?
I mean, ride it.
God.
Like through the drive-thru?
Oh.
Fuck yeah.
We need to get you a burrow.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I don't know. Some beast of burden. Like a water buffalo, I think.
Man on a buffalo.
Yeah.
Man on the buffalo. Well.
Yep. Yes. So this movie is going to be difficult to talk about.
Yeah, because you guys are going to interrupt me while I'm reading 7 pages of notes.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, we are. But... you know, one of our things is that we don't spoil. We try not to spoil, at least. And every damn thing you can say about this movie could be a spoiler.
Oh, yeah.
Let's tell you what. When we do this, let's just say, spoiler alert.
We're going to ruin this movie.
Go watch the movie, then come back and see if you agree with our shit.
I think that's fair.
Because this one...
We have to talk about this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there it is. Spoiler alert. Go watch the movie. All the magic of this movie, and if you guys liked it, I don't even know that yet, but all the magic of this movie, for me at least, is in the reveals of everything.
We ended up liking it.
Really,
I, more so later, it was another slow burn for me, like The Witch.
But it did have, like,
this scene here happened, you know, and it's like, oh, or when she goes a little crazy with the bird and everything like that, you know, so that a little bit to kind of keep you... You know, without just being like, you know. But then it ramps the fuck up. And then you're like, holy shit.
It goes full on to like it crazy fucked town.
Up. Yeah. Yeah. Which made it really good. So I, yeah.
Good. I'm
I ended up liking it.
Cool.
I did too, because it has, you know, it has a lot of shocking twists, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they reveal themselves slowly and also upon like a closer relook.
Yes, yeah, so you watched it twice.
Yeah, because they set up a lot of stuff in the beginning and throughout.
Yeah. I know, that, I need to rewatch
it. Yeah, that's going to play later.
I'm sure we're going to talk about a lot of those things.
It was on Prime for free, so.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I was like, oh, it's on Prime.
I like the fact that this was done by the same guys that did The Witch, because you're still tripping thy balls, but this time you can at least understand them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And this was.
You mean A24?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it A24 right?
is...
I think, didn't they do it?
Yeah, they're going to be hit or miss for me, because as much as I expound on how much I love things like The Witch and The Babadook and this, which are all extremely polarizing movies, very divisive, and A24 does like pretty much only those kind of movies.
Yeah.
There are some of their movies that I'm like, nah, dude. Like, I thought It Comes at Night...
That was a big letdown
at the end. I loved the movie and not the ending.
I watched it.
And Mother is just a pile of trash. Oh. It's just a pretentious pile of garbage.
I haven't watched it.
For me.
It has that girl I won't watch, so.
Well, yeah, that didn't make it any easier. I
can't stand that girl.
I can't even remember her
Jennifer
name.
Jennifer Lawrence, if you're listening.
There you go.
You can suck a bag of dicks.
We just lost one.
No! Oh, shit!
Well... I want our
plug
we were going to get.
He's not going to.
He'll edit it out.
Probably not. When does he ever edit that kind of shit out?
Yeah.
Anytime we say, oh, you edit that out.
He'll edit out like annoying click noises and like over amounts of like too many burps.
A lot of burps.
Yeah.
A ton of burps.
Because the glorious burps are, you know, worth it.
Oh, yeah. Are we going to mention what we're watching?
We haven't even talked about the movie.
Yeah. Okay, fuck. So we're watching Hereditary.
Hereditary.
And we got an awesome beer by Three Magnets.
We just all drinking one?
Sure. Yeah.
Hereditary.
Beer!
So this is a little on the nose, this beer.
You think?
You know, Hereditary, Hereditaries, whatevs. It's a phenom's beer. So I really wanted to do it. Also, we've had Three Magnets as guest beer before. but yeah. never kind of focused on them.
And, so of course, we've been there when we did our
absolutely
three ferries on seamen, three seamen on a ferry trip. Remember that? I found the pictures of that
show. I call that the Seattle trip. Yeah. But, you know, whatever.
I call it bro trip, so.
But actually, I was telling everyone at work recently.
We went on the ferry, and it was great.
About the three seamen on a ferry t-shirt idea. And, you know, this is the people at my work who were like, what? Why would you? What? And I was like, I don't know. It got pretty close to happening, I think.
All right, I'm going to abscond here, Aaron.
Okay.
Abscond.
Yeah, pour it in a glass. I don't want your potato lips on my can.
Yeah.
Your tea lips.
Yeah.
At least it... No, never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
But in a very real sense, this movie is entirely 100% about heritage. It's about this family and their lineage and the things they have passed one to another and the problems of...
And honestly, I think the fact that it's Heritage Haze is good because... Yeah. They don't really know what the fuck is being passed on to them.
Not very
There's
much.
There's a lot of unknown.
Yeah.
It's a little hazy.
Not a lot of clarity to this film. No. Until the end. Also, this is not when they wrap it up. Hazy. And I got to tell you, my biggest fear when I first watched this movie is the magic I learned of something like The Babadook, which was that I was into the whole movie and I was super excited about it and this and that and everything. But, you know, the monster just kind of doesn't. Makes sense, and there's that little voice in the back of your brain going, wait, how'd the book come? Is this a haunted house movie, or is this like a demon? Like, what? It just kind of didn't make sense until you get the mental health twist.
And then it clicks.
Yeah.
Which my lady shared with me, and then it clicked, and I was like phenomenally in love with the movie that everything I had watched was not what it was. So I loved it. My fear of this movie was that that was going to be the case. That I was going to watch...
That she's your cray.
Yeah. That I was going to watch 2 hours of this, and they were just going to rip that idea off and just say everyone in this family's a little cray-cray, and they've envisioned all these things and caused all their own problems, and, you know, maybe certain members of the family have already been, like... Well, I was afraid it was going
to
do that.
It was intended. I mean, it purposely was intended to have some kind of meditation on grief and trauma.
Sure.
That was a big, big part of it, which I think was a good vehicle to carry it... into the explanation of why things are happening, too.
But once again, spoiler warning, if you haven't seen this film, stop listening to this podcast.
Right
you don't
now.
Want this one. Go watch it. Come back. But having said that, what I really love about this film is that the payoff was what you thought it was.
Yeah, exactly.
All the weirdness that you saw culminated, which I thought was pretty brave, actually, because it culminated into some weird shit.
It did.
It got weird in there.
Because, it was telling, in a sense, two different stories at the same time that you don't really get until the end.
Yes, one of a family dealing with grief, dealing with past griefs and trauma and loss and dealing with all those things and dealing with their own alienation from each other. And then one with whoever is fucking with this family.
Exactly.
Yeah, which I'm glad there was that other.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm glad there was someone fucking with them because, it needed to be that.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well,
it's serious.
When I looked at the ingredients of the Heritage Haze, it kind of clicked. Like what Grace was saying, is the same kind of idea because you know they're using heirloom malts and they've got all kinds of weird collaboration stuff going with this beer. I have never heard of purple Egyptian barley. Is that a thing?
I have now.
Apparently.
Yeah, so that's cool.
That is cool.
just that alone.
This beer ain't purple.
Red Russian wheat has been used in this thing. It's just kind of an incredible little...
So basically, it's an all-Washington source hazy IPA brewed with heirloom grains from Palouse Colony Farm, Scott's beer barley, red Russian wheat, and purple Egyptian barley. And dry hopped with Simcoe, Chinook, and Centennial hops. So all local stuff.
I'm happy to see they've gotten as big as they have in just, like 4 or 4.5 years now.
Also, it's kind of amazing to me how big they are and how many different beers they release. If you see their brew system, it is the tiniest Wonka factory ridiculousness I've ever seen. Like, it is the smallest space for a brewery. Like, there's a lot of spots where you can't have more than one person and a lot of, like...
I'd assumed they had expanded from when we were there last, but...
No.
Then that's pretty impressive.
Right.
Yeah, I think they have plans on expansion.
These guys will have a dozen or more offerings on a shelf in a place when you walk
I don't
in.
Know how they're cranking out that much out of that little weird system. It's cool. It's great to see it. But shit.
Well, Oompa Loompas.
Yeah.
Did anybody look at what the Plaus Heritage, what that is, what the collaboration was they did with them on this beer?
I think they're the, like, look at the logo. Totally they're the didn't. Ones who grow the grain.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, because it is. It's...
Yeah, so they're a local place.
Okay, cool. So, this is supposed to be a hazy, but to me it feels very more IPA-ish. What, I mean, like straight IPA-ish?
It's straddling the line.
Yeah, it's bridging the gap. Because it's not super haze bomb. But it's definitely got the hop characteristics of a hazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that it stops short of going all tropical, fruity, florally, juicy, orange breakfasty. Like it's
got a little more dank in the background. Yeah. That's nice.
It has what I love about the Northwest IPAs that I still love more.
Yeah. So it's kind of a nice in-between.
It's very good.
This is a good, like you say, fence IPA hazy.
Yeah. It's a nice sweet spot, I think.
But yeah, no, 3 Mags is definitely worth checking out. They make some really good beers.
So, speaking of making good things. So, directed and written by Ari Aster. His very first feature film.
Oh, wow. Took a good job on it.
Right?
Yeah, right out the back.
Wow.
All this, like, clever scripting and hidden things and revelations and, you know, all this... The camera work and all that, you know. There is a director of photography who's somebody he actually went to the Film Institute with, but he planned all the shots. So, I mean, almost everything you see in this movie came out of his brain and straight into this film. And he says that he has 10 scripts that are written as of right now because he just wanted to be a script writer and then realized that there's no way he would let other people do his movies.
Because they'll do it wrong.
So he's just like, these are my 10 movies. And he has 10 scripts. Like what? Mm-hmm. What kind of weird savant shit is that?
Yeah, well, when you look into any information on this movie, you can see the amount of thought, detail, hidden information, hidden details that set something up, and then later deliver, and sometimes don't deliver. It's just an awareness piece that you're like, holy shit, that really was like, for instance. Throughout the house, there are little words that are written that they don't really even show you except for maybe once.
Yeah.
Turns out those words are part of, you know, a major part of the ceremony for, you know, this whole thing that goes down. You know, little subtle things like that all over the place.
And I think since we've already given the spoiler warning, we should at least put out the basics. But what you've got here is a family who the matriarch, grandma, who has just passed when we come into this. Turns out she's been a part of a cult, and she wants to raise a demon king, I guess, from hell. I think they say he's like the mischief.
Yeah.
The prince of mischief or something. Yeah. Paimon. They want to raise
The name of Paimon.
Because she's apparently the demon queen.
Yeah, she's the head of the whole cult and all that business. Because whoever brings this person and raises him and brings him to reality is bestowed with riches and blessings and all this, and it shows a person sitting on a pile of wealth and her occult books and things. And so she has gotten a whole cult together to basically curse her family so that Paimon will come from her lineage.
And
things have been going...
Be a vessel, one of the kids be a vessel.
And things, even before we become involved in this film, have been going well for her and badly for her, and so everything's just all fucked up now.
And apparently this Paimon... is actually real in like our world and our culture.
Yes.
What's his name? Ari Aster. Mm-hmm. You know, he wanted it to be actually.
Yeah, go away, girl.
Really loud, yeah. I'll bet it will be. He wanted that sense of like occult and satanic being to actually. Not be invented.
Yeah.
So he pulled some real shit.
He had that production designer. I was watching some extra features and there was a production designer that came on and she goes, yeah, you know, I had to read a lot of weird books, go down a lot of weird holes to like make this right. And she studied occult rituals so that it would look correct when it was on screen. And she studied all sorts of occult writings and things so that they could make this.
No names were changed to protect the innocent.
No, absolutely not.
On the occult.
Yeah, even the sigil that the cult uses is like Paimon's sigil. If you go back to the, what was it, the Something of Solomon, the... I don't know. There's a book that they went back
there
to.
There is. I actually have it here in my notes somewhere.
It's like a 100-year-old book that collects the sigils of angels and demons and all that kind of thing in it for ritualistic purposes. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, they just pulled it right out of there and stamped it all over their movie. So I'm kind of waiting to hear about this movie in 10 years when it has its poltergeist curse.
Right.
And everyone's dying or the set burned down or whatever. Because, they definitely fucked with all those things.
Yeah.
In a very realistic way. But at its root, this is part of this new wave of horror that is so divisive, which is that it's horror about the characters more than it's about the antagonist, whatever that might be. It's not about the killer, like a Michael or a Jason. It's not about even the demon or the cult. It's about the family and the characters, and there's a lot of films coming out that way. The Witch is that way. Babadook is that way.
17th century grimoire, Lesser Key of Solomon.
Lesser Key of Solomon. All right. Yeah. That's some old shit, though.
Yeah.
Well, then you know it's true.
It's definitely true.
It's absolutely true. The interweb said
it
is.
Bound in a book of human flesh.
I love when they do this. Babadook turned me on to this shit the first time. I love it when they put this horror, this suspension, thriller, whatever, in a questionable family dynamic of, you know, is this, emotional trauma? What is this? Is this a history of psychological problems that's, you know, genetic, like, which is what they lead you to believe with all of the tragedy that happens to, like, her mom's brothers and her, you know, mom side of the family. Because you know it's a horror movie. You know some spook shit's going to happen.
Yeah.
But the delivery of it gets you guessing.
And honestly, I was afraid it wasn't going to.
Yeah, and I'm glad
that it... And it sounded like Juan kind of had that same reaction when he watched it today. Like, I watched it being very... The first time, going, man, this better have some kind of cool payoff. Because even I was like, I like what they're doing, and the movie's really creepy, but I want something. I want some pizzazz. I want some kind of, like, horrific shit to go down. And it fucking does.
It does. Did we talk about this now? Did we all like it, or did we, are we split?
Oh, yeah. We liked it.
So no, it's funny. Yeah. I was reading a bunch of comments about how people are just shitting all over it. Just absolutely hate it. Well, and I wanted to print some of those up and read those, but I didn't. But that makes me curious. Like, what is it that they're expecting or looking for or what?
My lady stumbled on, well, she didn't stumble on it, but she said something to me yesterday that I thought was really awesome, which she said, these other movies that we're watching are about things that you can't run away from. And that's why it's, like, not the same scary for... Okay, imagine you're 18, you live at home, you live with your parents, you're still in school, you've got your first job, and you just bought your first car.
I don't have to imagine that.
Sure, but what do you know about the traumas yet to come in life? What do you know about the first time you can't pay rent? What do you know about the first time
you get fired from the shit. Job?
What do you know about the first time you have to move across country because your family makes you? What you don't know about the real life horrors and scary shit. What you know as scary is things you can run from. A boogeyman, a killer, a demon, things like that. So those are going to be the things that resonate in your head.
If you were raised right as a kid, you know that those are the things to run from.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. So these terrors, these are real terrors. Mm-hmm. These are the terrors of losing a child. These are the terrors of watching your family fall apart. These are the terrors of coming from a family that's racked with mental illness, and it has fucked up every goddamn thing. And I think it might take a little bit more life experience to relate to all those reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then you go and you throw, like, on top of that, that one of your sons or siblings or whatever is supposed to be a vessel for some Satan demon god. That makes it tough,
also,
man.
Also bad.
That's not good.
Yeah. Also shitty circumstance. I went through, like, some reviews of it and Rotten Tomatoes and things.
And even she says that in the movie. She's like, when she loses control of, you know, what she's saying, and she tells the kid, you know, I never wanted to be your mom or whatever. And he's like, what are you talking about? You know, oh, and she's like, I never wanted to have you. I tried to miscarriage you. I tried to do this, but your grandmother wouldn't let me. Then you kind of put two and two together, and I was like, whoa, shit. Yep.
Yeah.
Because yeah, she wanted the boy.
Well, and the other story with him
and then the little girl saying, grandma said that she wanted a boy, not a girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, because grandma liked the younger, weird one.
Because Paimon prefers a male form. Yeah, exactly. As we learned from like a 15-second quick flash of a book page.
Well, the thing is, like, that kind of came back to me, you know, after the kid said that. And then once the mom told the other one, I tried to kill you, you know, basically as a child, but grandma wouldn't let me do it.
And, then again, when he's alive, when she sleepwalks into his room and pours paint thinner all over him and is standing there with a book of matches. And when he wakes up, you know. Yeah, some fucked up things have happened in this family. Yeah. And so I like that we're guessing during that time, is this because mom's batshit? Or is this
that
because
was what, honestly,
some weird shit's going
through
on?
Through the whole movie, I was like, this is a Babadook. This is, mom is fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just her grief, like, manifesting into being a psycho killer.
Because it especially explodes when the best scene of the whole movie happens. Which is, spoiler alert,
pole?
Oh, we're beyond that.
The pole. Oh, yeah, fucking the pole, man.
Yeah.
Taking off the 10-year-old kid's head.
Mm-hmm.
It, the mom fucking, you know, because the brother is being irresponsible, right? And then and then he fucks up and the kid eats some cake that she's allergic to, and he has to rush her to the hospital, and she's sticking her head out the window, you know, trying to get some air. I didn't see that.
Just so happens he has to swerve around a dead animal on the road, and it just so happens where he swerves while her head is out the window trying to get air.
Pole.
This pole takes her head off,
yep.
And then you watch the movie a second time, and you realize that when you saw them driving to the party, there's the big giant sigil of Paimon like burned onto that pole.
Oh, yeah, that's a subtle little
cult. Yeah, made that happen. The cult set that up, put the animal in the road, did the things. Put the that second watch does give you way more of that. Yeah. But I enjoyed it just as much without any of that.
Yeah, yeah, me too. And it wasn't until this time I was like, "Holy shit, was that there the whole time?"
Yeah.
But then when that happens, yeah, the dynamic between the mom, like, still having to, like, have the son in the house that killed her little girl, and
And didn't say anything about it. Just and mom
already,
and mom already didn't like the son. That's been made clear that she has issues with her kid, and you know, tries to burn him and shit. Yeah. So adding that, he killed her weird fucking daughter.
Yeah.
But when you leave the body in the back of the, you know, Brady Bunch fucking sedan for mom to find in the morning when she's going to work.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, when you're 18, you're not ready to make those kind of choices, right?
That's right. Maybe say something.
Yeah, maybe
your
like,
sister's dead
by the way,
in the backseat.
Mom, killed my sister, didn't want you to find it, so I just, you know, I parked the car down the street, but just so you know.
Yeah.
Jesus, I'll pay for the car wash.
Maybe that. Yeah.
Oh, and that actor, Toni Collette, is that it?
Holy.
The mom? Yeah.
Yeah. She's balls. You want to talk about an Oscar snub for the genre we love.
Exactly. Yeah.
She got royally screwed.
She
does a great job of just, like,
she's amazing.
Deteriorating worse and worse. And
I thought her and the son both did a tremendous job. We talked a lot about The Shining. We talked about the relationships between the character when we did that episode, about the fact that Jack Nicholson and the other cast was told not to treat, I just forgot her name.
Popeye.
Olive oil.
Anyways, they were told not to treat her well, to be mean to
Shelley
her.
Duvall.
Thank you. Not to sit with her at lunch. All those things to alienate her as a character. I thought what was cool in this film is that Alex Wolff, who plays the son, and Gabriel Byrne, who's dad, knew each other previously from things that they had worked on. Alex Wolff and Millie Shapiro, the awesome little girl, went to acting school together and knew each other. So all of them knew each other. So the only one that didn't was Toni Collette. Mm-hmm. And so once again, we had this weird set dynamic where she was supposed to be becoming alienated from this family. And she started out as the odd duck, as the one that didn't belong, while everyone else is chatting each other up and knowing each other, which I thought
That was super cool. I liked the fact that they, for me anyway, used fairly unrecognizable actors. Mm-hmm. Sure, Toni Collette and the father, isn't
Gabriel
Byrne, the dude from Exorcist. Where is he from?
He's in End of Days with Arnold Schwarzenegger. He played the devil.
Yes, he fucking is. There we go.
That's what I was thinking of.
End of Days.
Yep.
And I always...
I just seen it not too long ago.
I wonder if that's as terrible as I'm remembering it. I want to watch it now.
It is terrible. I always get into movies far more if I don't recognize the characters too much.
Absolutely.
It's just... This and the little girl... Yep.
She's creepy as fuck.
No offense, but yeah, man, they picked a fucked up child to do this
one. Now, here's what's real funny. You watch the bonus features, because I have it on disc is how I watched it, so I was able to watch the one featurette that it has, and she's like bubbly and nice, and she's like, oh, I had so much fun, and oh, my favorite thing was doing my stunt in the car where I got to like hang out the window at 30 miles an hour. It's like being on a roller coaster, and she's like 100% normal.
And she got to eat so much candy, too.
Yeah, right?
The whole time she's just mowing on candy bars. And like, what is that kid doing?
But that's the thing, is all of that wacky...
was her acting.
That's her acting.
So that's pretty
tough. I wondered, I was like, either this kid's a really good actor or she's just really fucking weird.
I kind of thought they actually just got like a weird kid that was kind of a little socially abnormal and whatever.
But she actually did Broadway before this.
Yeah, she won an honorary Tony Award.
Yeah, for fucking Matilda.
Shit.
Yeah. So, I mean, she's the
badass little kid.
They got some talent on this one right here.
Well, it's funny because you guys were talking about her eating the candies and all that, and I was kind of wondering like how that played into it, other than to be a vehicle to tell us that she was allergic to nuts, because they keep asking her, does that one have nuts? Does it have nuts? But she's Paimon. From the we meet her in the movie, she has already been possessed.
Yeah, you never really
which
actually...
is why she's such a weirdo.
Yeah. So that's why, and also Paimon, we are now taught, is this king of mischief. And so that's why she's always not behaving. She's always wandering off. She's always doing these dumb things. She's very abnormal. And I like that when you think of, you know, demons or whatever, at least in like a popular culture way, you think of them wanting excess, you know, and wine and sweets and ladies around them. And so I kind of, that's how I took the candy.
Paimon wanted chocolate.
Yeah.
Well,
Paimon had a sweet tooth.
Paimon's got to have the sweets. They've made reference that, you know, chocolate is, you know, the sin of temptation. And of course, you know, if Charlie's fucking possessed by this satanic being, he's going
to
be like.
Up to Earth from hell. You're not going to start with Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
Nope.
So that was, I mean.
You're going to kill all the fucking
Brussels
sprouts.
You're
going
to be eating, by the way,
don't
which I thought was
don't even try to relate Brussels sprouts to chocolate. Stop it right now. Joke.
Chocolate-covered Brussels sprouts.
No.
Gross.
But
you're
going to
eat a Dove bar while you cut the head off a pigeon, which I thought was fucking class.
Yeah. Ah, yes. That was super cool. That's what they were. She was actually eating a Dove
branded chocolate. And she's so weird and calculated about some of the shit she did that I was just like, what the
That's what's the brilliance of the fucking director guy and all these subtle, like, sub things that you're you don't see unless you maybe do a little research.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, I almost didn't want to do much research because just watching the film, I was left with so many things where I was like, I love that they did that. I love that they did that. Oh, this was amazing. That I didn't really feel the need to go down that rabbit hole. But then I watched that one dumb bonus feature and I was like, I have must know more. Because you find out just how much of this was intentional.
Yeah, and that's what I've said before in the past. That's what I love about doing this podcast. I think we're given maybe people that hadn't watched it before or watched it and didn't care for it a little bit of it, maybe a different thing to appreciate it. Because I learned so much about like watching it and then going back and saying, well, now I got to speak intelligently about that. Which, by the way, I've given up on that actual part. But finding out all this
I've tried to edit,
real brilliance behind some of these writers and directors and what they're doing, maybe sometime even for their own shits and giggles. Like, they don't care if somebody knows about this, but fucking Paimon, he's digging chocolate. Chocolate's sin and temptation. I'm going to have that in there. I'm going to make it prevalent, whether or not anybody gets it or not.
Yep.
He's got pie in his name.
Paimon.
Yes, I'm sure.
Give me a pie. He's Jamaican.
I want a fucking chocolate pie.
He's Jamaican too. Give me a Paimon.
Practical effects. The decision to use all practical effects, which we tout that every time it happens, because obviously at this table we like practical effects more than we like CGI and things. What? But
damn straight, son.
But in a movie like this, you know, that might not have been your first. You know, if you're making a gore film like The Void or something, you can get a lot of fans and make a lot of headway just by making it full of practical effects, because that's what we want. Something like this that's very psychological.
No, I like the suspenseful buildup of it. Before the gore.
Yeah.
So that, because you didn't know.
Oh, man.
There's either going to or not.
There's some payoff, too. Yeah, there's some good shit.
Yeah, there is.
Well, I mean, right to the point where this guy had such a vision that he had to build the entire house on set. That wasn't a real house.
Yeah.
So that it would match up with his vision of the miniature house that, or the miniature pieces that Colette, the mom, was making, which I thought was a really bizarre
that's
way.
That's real of, fucking weird.
Yeah. Because she introduce a profession, and that's, you know, miniature.
She's an artist.
Yeah,
and
that was super creative.
I liked it just because of the license it gave him to use all those mind-melty moments where you were like, wait, are we in the model again? Because so many times like you started beginning. In the model.
That was really cool. The beginning of the
movie. Yeah, and went to real life. And then so many times you started in real life, and now you're in the model. And so
I'd like to say, too, there are moments the you rendering don't know. Of her daughter's decapitated head was really good.
I laughed really hard. I laughed
Dude, when
I saw
that. Dude, the jaw was all smashed in. And the, oh, man.
Oh, yeah. She's fucking she covered in ants.
Yeah, I mean, just imagine.
There was a lot of bugs in this movie, too.
Her husband didn't like it too much, but, I mean.
They showed a speedometer at 80-plus miles an hour.
Yeah.
And then he swerves around a dog, and her head connects directly with a telephone pole, and it's popped right the fuck off.
Oh, yeah. It was like.
And that's what it looked like.
Yeah.
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 It was, yeah, it was
wrong. But, yeah, no, I love that she made a model of that.
Yes.
That's a strong mom, man. Dealing with grief through art.
And then it shows it still on the roadside, like some dead roadkill sitting there.
Oh, yeah. People just
driving by. It's like,
Well, he said, Ari Aster, he said he wanted to make a film about suffering that took the suffering seriously.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I think that.
Which is great because it doesn't feel, you know, made up or whatnot and fake and whatever. It just seems like. Everything is just genuine and the, real.
Yeah.
And I'm just like,
those scenes of like someone just wailing and sobbing and crying or other people just like staring silently in the dark. Like the way that everyone handles all these emotional things, all feeling very much like the way you have handled certain things in your life.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like, fuck.
You generally feel bad.
When you go to a tap takeover and they already blew the keg.
Yes.
Yes.
Just like that. Fuck. Right? Like last year when we got to Roscoe's, like 10 minutes after they ran out of Pliny, and we were like, damn it. And then we drank other beers, and it was fine. just like that is what I'm saying.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, to be able to see the progression of this mom who she loses her mother, who she was very obviously not close with, had a very like awkward, distant relationship with. So she was grieving in a weird way anyway, but then to lose her kid. And her kid
like pretty quickly too.
And her kid made it clear before that happened that she cared more about grandma. Because she made a comment when she was in that grief group that she gave her daughter to her mom.
Yep.
So she basically gave up that child.
Well, and we Charlie find out grandma has grandma's nursed her because, from the breast. And
Because grandma's cuckoo and was trying to raise Paimon.
Yeah.
So grandma kept her. So like when grandma died, Charlie was like, who's going to take care of me now that grandma's gone? And her mom's like, what the fuck? Yeah.
Come on. I like that one of the first things we learn about this family is that the mom had a brother, grandma's son, who killed himself, hung himself in grandma's room and left a suicide note that said, grandma was trying to put people inside me. And they tell you that in literally like the first, like, 20 minutes of the movie?
Yeah.
And it's not until literally after you've watched the movie that you go, oh, dick. She had already put Paimon in another one of
her kids. Yeah, she had already tried to make him a host.
She had already stuck him in their son. Yeah, and then had to re-stick it in the daughter. And then we find out that the mom hid the son from grandma because grandma was just a little too weird around the kids, which seems legit. All of those things literally come just crashing into your brain in those last like 15, 20 minutes.
Even using symbolism that you may not see, like obviously you're going to see a ton of ants on a fucking head on the side of the road, but then they carry that ant theme throughout the movie. And I thought to myself, oh, of course they would because the ants were all over the kid's head. So that's going to be what manifests in the mom's mind as, you know, like a nightmare. But it turns out that ants are I mean, it goes apparently way back in art history that ants are a symbol of death and decay through art history. So that was just another brilliant placement of something that completely made sense and then carried throughout the whole story, but had this double entendre to it.
Yeah, there is not a single accident in this film. There's nothing that wound up on this screen that wasn't designed to be there. And just learning about Ari Aster and how he makes these films. I'm so excited for his next one that he just announced, which is Midsommar, which is the, I think it's going to be like a Norwegian folktale horror film about a bunch of people who go to Norway on like a vacation and things go wrong. So nice. I can only assume it's going to be more occulty and things like that. Yeah. So I'm super juiced. But yeah, none of this. Juan touched on something a second ago, which I thought was very, very cool, which was how quickly we lost Charlie.
Yeah.
Because she's one of the more interesting characters I've seen on screen in anything in like quite some time. Because she is weird and odd and makes her little, you know, mouth click noise all the time.
Oh my God. And the way they use that throughout the rest of the movie, right? You're just like, ah, God, where is it?
So interesting. And there is so much focus on her, where the brother is treated like this kind of secondary character and dad's treated like not at all. That you're positive this movie is about her. And
yeah.
She's the first one we lose. And it's really early. And I thought that was pretty.
Well, and then with that. Too. My brain instantly went to, oh, Charlie's not gone. Uh-oh. Mm.
Well, then the medium shows up and says she's not.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. What a whole... So I had a little bit of a disconnect on that part.
Okay.
I thought so there's the support group that the mom goes to, and she's all like, you know, blah. And she meets, is it Joan?
Joan.
And Joan's like, oh, yeah, I lost my son and my grandson to drowning, you know, 4 months ago, and I've been here. And so they kind of, like, connect, and you're like, okay. But then it seems super rapid where Joan suddenly comes back to the mom and says, oh, by the way, this, you know, random guy I met, and he did a seance, and... Now I know how to do seances, and here's a pamphlet, and you can do seances, and you can totally connect with your kid. And I was like, what? This all happened in like a 5 minute period, it seemed like.
Well, they had tried before that, because we have that cool scene, and we actually spoke a little bit about the scene while we're watching the movie, where they just show the front door from the inside, and it's full of mail. So you know the mail's all been delivered already, but then all of a sudden you see a shadow walk up, and a new pamphlet slides in amongst the mail. And that pamphlet is for a spiritual medium. And it's like, having problems with your grieving, you know, want to get in touch with your loved ones, all this kind of stuff. And then the person walks away. So they had tried the pamphlet, which was obviously ignored. Yeah. So then they were like, all right, shift gears.
Let's get somebody in.
Well, and Joni was definitely part of the cult. I mean, and I think Grandma had it set up that the cult members were going to watch the family and follow through. Like, you definitely get that vibe. And I wonder if, because her son and grandson died, if maybe that they were potential hosts too.
I assumed they were sacrifice.
Oh, maybe sacrifice.
Because Grandma left a note for Mom in her spiritualism book. And it says something like, our life has been full of sacrifice and loss and all of this kind of stuff. But don't worry. It will be worth it when the payoff comes, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, obviously.
Mommy.
Way cooler than that. And then written in like the handwriting of like an 8-year-old.
So I think in the same way, Grandma had to sacrifice her one son to try to get Paimon here and then go for the daughter. And then now she's just like, look, I just got to.
Her bestie sacrificed her son and her grandson.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that, Joan probably just had to do away with, or maybe they tried them.
Maybe. Yeah. Either way, it's all connected to that. Because one thing it's the male. Basically, you know, it's her male family members that are dropping off, so.
Which is what it's all about,
Yeah.
And upon watching it again, I could see why people watching it the first time would be like, oh, this movie's so stupid. Because that whole rapid seance, like, Joan now has the magic to summon the dead, and now so does, you know, Mom, and she brings the family down, and there's, you know, spirits and blah, and I was like, what the fuck, man, this is like too quick, too soon, it makes no sense. It's a cheap move to try to get something going. So that's totally where my head went when this came up, so I can see, like,
me too, the first time I saw it.
But when you put all the pieces together, you're like, that's kind of brilliant, because they tried to reach Mom through the mail first and all this stuff.
Well, I can't tell you how many negative comments I read that say this movie is boring as fuck, I couldn't even finish it.
Oh,
and
God.
I'm like, well, there you go.
Yeah. I don't understand that.
Guess what? It is. It wasn't for me. I was riveted from minute one, because that's what I like. But I can acknowledge that this movie is boring as fuck for quite some time. But the payoff is fucking real.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's a big-time payoff that's pretty amazing.
I actually jumped when Mom was on the fucking ceiling. And then when Mom wasn't.
They did a lot of, like, creepy things creeping in the background. And, like, you're focused on the foreground and then shit happens in the background. One of the moments where they were in the model, where all of a sudden Grandma's fucking in the doorway. You're like, ah! And then you see her eye. You're like, ah! What the fuck? Stop it!
They pulled all the same tricks that something like The Conjuring...
Yeah.
Or an Insidious, or, you know, those popular franchises right now that are very much based on jump scares. I mean, they are. No matter how, you know, creepy they try to be or whatever, the reason they work is they're jump scare movies. And that's cool. That has a place, and I like those movies, actually.
I enjoy them.
But these guys were done do the same trick.
But instead of having the person pop up behind you, they're just there for a solid minute of screen time while you're going, dear Jesus.
Yeah.
They're right there.
It's like what they did in Exorcist 3 when that fucking nurse was scurrying across the top of the ceiling.
Yeah.
That was such a non, like, in-your-face thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was just like, hey, motherfuckers, if you're paying attention, some scary shit just happened.
Yeah.
And that made it even better.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. When the mom was on the ceiling and then she wasn't, and then she was in the corner and just started running after the sun. I'll tell you,
the creepy part for me was the mom pounding her head against the door. Rapidly.
Oh,
was just,
on
I was
the
like,
hanging on just the like, ceiling.
Whoa.
Or when the son, like, beats the shit out of himself in the classroom.
You know, funny thing about that, he actually wanted to break his nose.
Are you serious?
And the RV. I can't remember his name right, Ari. Said, no. we'll put something padded down, but apparently the padded... like surface of the desk still had a hard thing underneath it. And when he actually hit himself really hard and he dislocated his jaw.
Oh,
so
because the kid apparently that's some is like serious a method. Super method. Yeah. Actor. I mean, like I have some stories about that also, but he really wanted to smash his own nose. And was like, I'll do that for the movie. Let's do it.
But that was a fucking incredible scene.
Brother and Peter and Charlie were sent out in character around town while pre-production was happening. So they would get the two of them together and Peter would be Peter, Charlie would be Charlie, putting on all that weirdness and quirkiness and everything. And they would say, okay, go buy Charlie some school clothes. So like that weird sweatshirt that she's wearing in the movie and it's all awkward and not fitting enough. All of that came because the two of them wandered around town as each other with Peter trying to get like Charlie to answer questions or talk or do things and like try to get her to decide on what clothes she wanted while she's being so like the amount of like method stuff that went into this was
that's right. That hoodie came in handy. Tons. She had a big old pocket for those scissors and that bird head.
That's right. Sure. And a candy bar,
And a candy bar. I love that she's just like snip and just like slides it into her pocket like nothing happened. I'm just like,
and then just later a little hot glue.
You're so fucking weird.
You mentioned it earlier, but I still can't get over the fact that they chose a fucking Dove chocolate bar that she's eating while she's chopping her head off of that bird.
That was pretty fucking funny.
She you know, she doesn't discriminate against chocolate, though. She was eating M&M's.
Fuck yeah,
she had a
was.
Crunch bar at one point. She had a Hershey bar at one point. Kid ate a lot of chocolate.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nope.
I gotta admit, though, I was slightly confused and maybe expected more from the actual ending.
I'm with you on that.
I was like, what just happened? Because they, you know, they didn't. And Deanne agrees, by the way.
Sure. Yeah.
100%.
I found that out yesterday. Yeah.
But when you put all the pieces together from the beginning where all those little subtle things happen and you then see, I think that's where a lot of people are like, this movie sucks. It's like, well, no, you got to do a little work. You got to earn this movie.
The ending isn't there to wrap it up for you. Yeah. The ending is there for you to now reflect back on everything you've just seen and go, oh, fuck balls.
I like the ending.
I like the ending. I just felt like it needed to go just like a couple steps further. It was like, here's this climax and no wrap up.
Now,
I feel like it just needed a little bit of a wrap-up.
Yeah, I thought the wrap-up was during the credits. And this is where I'm going to get all weird filmy on everybody. But in the credits, they play that song.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember what the song titles or who knows it.
It's by so-and-so, and it's flying on an airplane.
Yeah, I've seen Life from Two Sides, whatever, whatever. I thought Clouds Illusions was a lot of the wrap-up, was the choice of that song, which you know was massively intentional because there's no other songs in this fucking movie other than some rap songs at a kid's party.
Yeah, right?
Everything else is just creepy as shit score, which was also fantastic. Uh-huh. But
I think for me what it boiled down to...
going, I've now seen everything from two sides. I've seen it from, I thought my mom was crazy sack of crap, and now I'm seeing it from, oh my God, my mom was trying to protect me from this whole time. And oh well, we're here anyway, mm-hmm. kind of thing. Like I was just
that makes, no, that makes sense. That's very esoteric of you.
Sure,
yeah.
I gotta go there.
He usually does.
That's what I do.
My thing, I appreciated it because it had blood, guts, and supernatural all at the end. But my thing was like, here's this psychological movie, and then all of a sudden, in probably 10 minutes, then there was all of the supernatural gore,
Rosemary's Baby.
You know, fucking headless mm-hmm. people floating up into the treehouse,
like naked, all of a sudden, in the corner of the closet for a while.
Fucking Andy Griffith off in the forest looking at you naked. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was all at once. It was like, here's all the supernatural gory shit, boom. And I was like, whoa, wait, what just happened?
Yeah.
But fucking mom floating up on the ceiling, chopping her own head off with a piano wire.
Oh, that was fucking sweet. And the noise, like my jaw and everything. I was just like,
and you never see the actual disconnection. The
finish, but you hear it.
But you hear it.
Oh, yeah.
You hear that last. Yeah. You're like, oh, fuck.
God damn it.
It was terrible. Which, the whole beheading thing, I mean, that goes through the entire film. So I'm sure there's threads of that you could run down that I didn't even want to think about. But, you know, Grandma ends up without a head. Mom ends up without a head. The kid has models with the head. Charlie's head gets popped off.
Charlie chops off the birds on heads.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then fucking mom's sleepwalking was another just weird element to just throw in there.
Yeah.
You're like, is this a real threat or isn't it? What the fuck's going to happen with
it? I think it was just showing
I don't know that was sleepwalking, though.
I think it's because mom subconsciously knew that this family was going down the fucking shitter and was going into demon land. And she was trying to end it subconsciously. Like, just say, let me just take out my own kids. And then they can't become whatever my mom is trying to make them, kind of thing. That's how I read it. Plus, it did do a lot to throw you off.
And there's so much feeling that, like, you just had this vibe that there were people on the peripheral just observing this family.
Well, and in a second watch, you see just how many of them there actually are on the peripheral. They're in the background of tons of scenes. Mm-hmm. You see little things like when Joan was trying to convince the mom to come, and because she had been in contact with her son, and it was through this chalkboard that she uses that it was his chalkboard, and that's my attunement to him, and all that. You get to see that in the back of her car in the shopping bags is that chalkboard. Like, she's literally buying it right then.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
She doesn't have a son that she's communicating with. Like, all of that is just that supernatural mumbo jumbo they're doing.
I don't think I care for Joan so much.
No, Joan wasn't great by the end of all this. No,
she was not cool.
Well, there's the smiling man, and the smiling man shows up, both standing in the doorway at the end, which was fucked up. But, you know, he's at Grandma's funeral.
You know who we should have seen in the forest naked smiling? Hmm. Wilford Brimley.
Oh, God.
You know, we see pretty close.
I mean, we kind of did.
We get to see lots of
I bet that guy had diabetes.
Yeah.
No, Charlie was on her way to diabetes, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, yeah.
The amount of chocolate she was shoveling.
That's right.
Yep. Right now, we're playing a scene in the background here that just leads up to the dad fucking catching on fire. Mm. It's coming up, though.
Yeah. Eventually.
This is a testament to Toni Collette's acting chops. I had read that scream, that like, oh my God, I just lit my husband on fire and he's burning to death. She does that back up.
Covered the face,
That'll just happen in one shot. That was the last shot of the filming, and she fucking nailed it in one shot. And I was like, are you kidding me? How do you get to that spot?
Like, yeah.
Did this book burning, trying to get rid of the book, remind you of Babadook?
Yeah. It did, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely was this vehicle that, you know, but it didn't, like, obviously
maybe
it didn't
play
it big. Maybe
I can destroy this and make it all go away.
Yeah, they're like, let's get rid of it and make
but
it
But then you
better.
Realize, I can't just destroy the book and make it all go away.
Yeah, there's got to be a sacrifice.
It's so much deeper than
everything.
That.
Yeah. Everything comes with a sacrifice. I think it's cool that we, and again, I think this is something Juan mentioned earlier, but we care so much for this family by the end that when shit does start going really, really bad for them, it's super traumatizing for us.
When it hits rock
bottom. More than it would be where if the movie started with scenes of mom crawling on the roof, like every Conjuring does. That's within every 5 minutes, and you're like, oh, okay, cool. So that's going to be a shit that happens. That's not shit that happens.
I was rooting for Peter, man. I was rooting for Peter the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't go so well.
No, it doesn't.
Doesn't go. Or it goes super good.
True. He's now omnipotent.
Like the second from the last scene when everything's revealed, they're all in the treehouse. There's these people bowing down.
Yeah.
Peter looks right into the camera.
Yeah.
Right at you.
It's because he's not Peter anymore at that point.
But it's like, he's like saying, I told you.
Yeah. Paimon knows. He knows your deepest secrets.
Well, and I think that's some of the, like I was saying with the song.
Yeah.
Is that about that or something?
No. A little bit. But with the song that happens in the literal seconds after that, and it's talking about seeing life from both sides. I've seen life from both sides. I think that's just him going, oh, okay. And in a way, that's an affirmation of knowing, oh, mom did love me. She wasn't fucking crazy as shit. Oh, dad was just trying to protect me. He wasn't just mad at mom for being crazy as shit. Like all of those things come rushing in probably at that exact second that he was becoming something else.
I love the fact that grandma gets back in the scene.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, a little, most of her.
Most of her, anyway. Yeah. And that was another cool little thing, too, because the husband heard early in the movie, oh, somebody just desecrated, you know, my wife's mom's grave, and he kept it to himself. And then they reveal it down the road, you know, oh, the fucking body was actually dug up, and now it's up in the attic with fucking, you know, unholy symbols around it. And the dad's like, I'm done with you, crazy wife. I can't handle it. You dug up your fucking mom? Are you kidding me? You know, and you're still at that point wondering, well, how is she crazy?
At that point, she still didn't know if she was just crazy.
Oh, yeah.
She was even like, she's like, I need you to go upstairs and see what I saw. And I think a lot of that was to make sure she actually saw it, because she kept having so many weird moments of like hallucinating and sleepwalking that at that point, she didn't know what the hell was reality and what was just in her head. So at that point, she is kind of at her breaking point where it's like, am I just completely insane? Or is this shit actually happening? So she makes him go upstairs to go see it. Because otherwise she's just like, this could just be me being crazy. This could just be me, like, when she saw her son with all the bugs all over his eyes and everything.
Oh, that's right.
Well, and then she wakes up.
All the things that the rest of the family goes through are real things. The dad has to go pick up the son at school when he smashes his face into a desk.
Yeah.
He doesn't know that the kid was, like, mid-possession at that point. He just thinks the kid's acting out in grief because he inadvertently killed his sister. You know, the son only knows that he has lost a family member or two family members in very rapid succession. And mom's losing her mind.
Was it inadvertent, really?
Well, to him.
Was it?
So the only person that sees any of the, we'll call it, I guess, supernatural side of this film is mom.
Yeah.
So that makes us wonder, is it real? And that probably made all of those other characters have to be written from the point of mom's just losing her bonkers.
Which, mom has a reason to be losing her bonkers.
Yeah.
To lose a parent and lose your kid in a matter of, what, is it days?
Yeah.
Maybe a week?
Yeah.
Like, it's not long.
And she's trying to make sense of it. Yeah. She is fucking insane, trying to go sane.
Yeah.
Essentially.
She's the only one that knows the truth. And she's the only one that's, like, losing her mind. Yeah, so it's a very weird mix of her, I don't know, relationship with the other characters, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so all you naysayers, man, fucking go see it again.
Yeah, well,
I think.
Absolutely, I agree. But you're not ever going to... I mean, somebody that watches this movie and, you know, goes to sleep during it or just hates it or watches it till the end and goes, that was stupid, that doesn't make sense, they're not going to come around and like this film. So I think that's important to just say, like, you're not wrong. It's not for you. That's totally cool. And that's where I think we have to acknowledge that there are definitely multiple types of horror fans out there. And like I was talking to my lady, that wasn't the case, like, in the 80s, early 90s, even early 2000s. We all liked all the shit.
Yeah.
Sure, we all watched whatever. A ghost movie came out? Fuck yeah, ghosts. You know, slasher came out? Fuck yeah, we like slashers too. Giant shark movies? Cool. We were just happy to get anything.
Wait, what?
But in this day and age of, like, oversaturation, where you can stream everything, you have a billion things at a moment's notice, you have infinite access to everything that comes out, if you're a little pirate bastard, you have the luxury now of picking and choosing what you don't like. In the same way...
What the fuck is a little pirate bastard?
You steal shit off the internet.
Stealing shit and downloading
stuff. Oh, gotcha. Yeah, okay, I was taking you literally there.
No, not like a peg leg guy with a parrot. Yeah. Okay. But we have that luxury now, which is awesome, because it also affords that luxury to directors. They can now make a movie like this that is very polarizing, that is very specific in who it's targeting, and they'll find their audience. And it happens, it's us.
Now, I got
it's also not a lot of other
films. I got a question. You guys see if you agree with this or not. We've got all kinds of communities. We've got the superhero community, the sci-fi community, the horror community, the Buffy community, the Twilight, all those, right? It's the Star Wars community.
Nerds.
When you...
I'm just... I don't know. I had to say it once.
At that point, nerds happen.
No. I just picked one, yeah.
Well, it's kind of apropos to the question.
And Doctor Who.
If you've spent any time on social media and you see somebody post something about a Star Wars movie, it is fucking balls out on. There's hate, there's slander, there's trolls, there's just blah, 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 blah. Yeah. The MCU with fucking Miss Marvel coming up here, everybody's like, oh, I hate the actress, fuck this, this is stupid, and or the DC universe, you know, that's definitely polarized. And so
that's
much.
That's because the DC universe fucking sucks.
True.
And that's the point, is that you get all of this,
That's why we're polarized on that.
You get all of this on a social media thing where the community, the fans, are just vicious to each other. I think, tell me if I'm wrong or not, that the horror community is actually so much not like that. They're probably the most aligned.
No, you're wrong.
No, I would totally disagree, only from the amount of horror groups that I belong to and the fact that literally over half of everything that's said makes me want to like break my own nose like the kid did in the movie.
See, I would disagree. I would say that out of all of the communities, the horror one is the most Gentile amongst themselves.
No, I'm gonna say that's like anime cosplay guys.
if you'll
let
bronies definitely I think take
you've
it.
You've got some fucking tolerance I do not have. Bronies. So I'm gonna actually give the most accepting and unified
to bronies
to anime. Because I mean they'll watch fucking Pokemon on the same day they'll watch, you know, Akira or whatever.
Aaron?
So yeah, I'm giving it to them.
Okay.
Nerd.
Used to be an anime.
A question came up that I think deserves an answer.
Hey, what's a brony?
Juan wants to know what a brony is.
What?
He does not know.
He doesn't know what a brony is.
Absolutely knows.
He can't remember.
No, what is a brony?
He totally knows. He absolutely knows.
No, I absolutely don't.
You don't?
Being the leading expert, Aaron,
why don't... My Little Pony Bros.
No, I have no fucking clue.
Google brony right now.
My phone's off because we're recording.
My Little Pony tends to be a girl-centric thing when it came out, but there's
a girl-child-centric thing.
Yeah, there's men and boys that embrace the dressing up as My Little Ponies, and they call them bronies, and that's the thing. Yeah.
Definitely Google it, though, just not on my Wi-Fi, but Google it and go down that wormhole.
I am not going to Google it, no.
I Googled Dick Shark.
There's some guys with some amazing Photoshop skills that have had some amazing dates with My Little Ponies. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, not going to happen.
You should check it out.
No.
I'll Google it for him.
No, you won't.
Yeah.
You
definitely do it.
Oh, put a brony backdrop on his phone.
I'm good at that.
Yeah.
I'm like,
all of that
fingers
is to
ever
say,
for
Lee,
background changes.
You don't have a phone. You cannot talk.
We're not all going to agree on what we like, things like that. And I actually I went down that line on this movie because in preparing for this podcast, thank you. I appreciate it. I was like, oh no, here we go again. Because we've done Babadook, we've done The Witch. These are movies that a lot of people fucking hate. But they're amazing fucking films.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, what is going on here? So I went down and did a little bit of looking into things like what they're... like Rotten Tomatoes averages, like what the scores on IMDb are, things like that, compared to like what the film scores were when they did like Cinema Score or when audiences are polled, things like that. To see, because I have a second theory on all this kind of thing, and I'll go through these results first. Okay, The Witch. 91% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. And Rotten Tomatoes, you know, is an aggregation of personal viewpoint and critics and things like that.
Higher than I thought it would
be. That movie's got a 91% because it's fucking amazing. It's a tremendous movie. It got a C- in theaters when people first witnessed it.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they didn't have closed caption.
That might be a lot.
True story. You're like, what the fuck are they saying? I should not have pre-gamed.
And that was my argument with that movie, was I couldn't understand fucking word they said.
Well, it comes at night.
It wasn't the slow burn part. It was the, what are you saying?
I got enough Renaissance Fair days with me.
See, I don't. So
I have zero issue with any of that. So, yeah, I don't know. But it comes at night, 88%. Got a D when it was first released. Hereditary, 92%, which on Rotten Tomatoes, that is fucking tremendous score, which it should have. D+. And then the steaming pile of bullshit, Mother, which I put on there just because a lot of people do like it. It only got a 69%, which I think is way closer to what it should be.
Yeah.
And it got a full-on F when it was first reviewed. Good. So what this tells me is, these are the kind of horror movies that you cannot surprise someone with. You can't have someone at work say, hey, what horror movie should I watch tonight? And go, oh, Hereditary is super good. Because they don't know what they're going to see. They're probably thinking they've asked for a horror movie. I like Halloween. I like Friday the 13th. Sure. I like The Exorcist. Yeah. I like the... And then they get this, they're going to be pissed.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's the key to this kind of weird horror, is that you got to be straight up honest with people up front. This is what's coming. Don't try to sell it as something else. Don't cut your trailer. Throw
trailers
else.
With a bunch of jump scares. Fuck yeah.
The trailer for this movie. I remember the trailer for this movie because the trailer was so hyper focused on fucking weird ass Charlie that you're like, oh, it's just another stupid like Damien movie.
Yeah.
You're like, whatever, the kid's possessed. Mm-hmm. That looks lame.
I can see that.
Honestly, the trailer, I was just like, oh, that doesn't look very good. So I think some of these movies, it's hard to get the point of these kind of more psychological thrillers across in a, like, 1 minute trailer.
I thought it was like, you know, an Annabelle or a
Insidious. Yeah, I thought it was just going to be another kind of Conjuring meets.
Conjuring, yeah.
You gotta
Exorcist, whatever. It's a weird, creepy, possessed kid. Okay, whatever.
And I think that road goes both ways. I mean, if you're making, you know, The Conjuring or The Nun, they show all the best jump scares in the trailer.
Which also pisses me off.
But I think it's because they're like, this is the person we're attracting.
It's true. Yeah.
So let's just show them what they're coming for. And then everyone goes and sees it and they love it. And sure, they just ruined like a ton of the scares.
Oh, yeah.
But they still work because that's what you're excited about.
And
you're
I don't remember. I don't remember the trailer for The Witch, but if they had shown all like the spooky stuff in The Witch and then I went and saw it, I'd be like, I'm totally disappointed. This is
I feel
not
like
the
Witch
movie
had
they
a really
advertised.
Weird, kind of vague
was,
trailer, too.
The Witch
where
made
it
seem
kind of,
like there was
like,
going to be
what?
Some seriously weird shit found out in those woods, and it was going to be a fight on with this family and whatever that is, and whatever it was took their kid, and you know they're going to get a bit.
That was my point, was that if they had done that, and then I went to see it, I'd be like, well, this isn't The Nun or the... fucking Insidious or whatever that
well,
I wanted
the,
to see.
Worst
so it can
offender,
work both ways.
The Worst Offender right here. It comes at night. No, it doesn't.
Comes at like, you know, twilight or like mid-morning.
You spend an hour, 45 minutes waiting for something to come. Taint nothing coming. Nothing comes, nothing happens. I have come to like the movie for the dread that it put me through.
Yeah,
and
actually.
The atmosphere and all those things because I like those things.
I need to watch that one.
But when you name your goddamn movie, It Comes at Night, some shit better come at night that's important to the story. That's all I'm saying.
What I think is interesting...
So that was really disappointing.
...is out of those ones, the trailer that I thought seemed the creepiest was Mother.
Oh, God.
I still haven't seen the movie. But I remember the trailer. I was like, oh, that looks kind of fucking creepy. I'll probably watch that.
Yeah.
Apparently it's atrocious, but I haven't
That's
seen it
That's what
either.
I've heard.
The trailer for Mother made me think it was going to be like Hereditary. It made me think like it was going to be one family in a house being persecuted by a cult, this kind of stuff, which it, I don't want to go down that road, which it kind of is.
Yeah.
Only it really fucking isn't, and it's all an allegory for some other shit, and it's...
Yeah, no, yeah. I'll probably watch it at some point.
There's a point where you can put some mastercraft into your film, and you can sculpt every moment, and you can do all these things, and then there's a point where you go so highbrow and like so avant-garde, and you're like... Everything has a meaning, and I'm gonna weave.
Oh,
and you just go way past common sense. That's Mother.
Good enough.
Yeah, it's too bad.
For me, I don't know. A lot of people really like it. You know, so
I'll probably just stick to my shark movies.
It is not.
I have
one
standards.
Of those.
There was one little
they're
nod
low, but they're there.
That I have written down on my notes here that I wanted to mention earlier that I didn't, and that is that in the classroom, they have written on the chalkboard, "Escaping Fate," which apparently was a direct nod to Carpenter's 1978 Halloween, which is what the speech was in the classroom then.
Mm.
And I thought that was pretty sweet.
Nice.
Kind of cool.
I know. I need to go back there and watch. There were also a lot of scenes where there were like small words written on walls, and like there was a lot of little.
One of them was Latin for opening Pandorum, like opening.
Yeah, hell. There was some sort of Pandorum something, and then there was another one. But there were a lot of like weird little clues. So this is definitely one of those movies that I'm like, okay, now I need to actually go back, watch it. And really watch the background and pay attention to things.
One of them was Zazas, which apparently is a name or a demon that comes up a lot when people use Ouija boards.
Ouija boards,
which is probably just a whole Slenderman thing where one person said it once and everyone says it.
Yeah.
They used words found in necromancy. They used Hebrew.
Aramaic was in there.
That's what I thought was kind of interesting. Like there were some weird little... You're like, okay, this is fucked up. But you're not as focused on those because you're so focused on what the fuck is actually happening.
Yeah.
But.
All done after Toni Collette said she would no longer do horror movies of any kind or scary movies. She said she didn't like doing them. It made her anxious. She wanted to do other things. She was completely done doing them.
She's so good at it.
And then she read this script and was like, well, shit, one more.
Yeah, sure. I mean, she's got Sixth Sense under her belt. She's got this under her belt. She's got a number of cool.
I thought
somebody put everything we're talking about here into their words. So I cut and pasted them. These are not my words. I didn't even write down who it was. So I don't know. Transcribe this. Type it into Google if you really care. But I thought it was really perfect. And it was somebody talking about this film. And they said, it's the dread versus scare thing again. American audiences seem to want a movie that will make them jump, scream, thrill, and squirm. They don't seem to want a movie that will burrow inside them, underneath their ribcage and around their throat, up inside their bone marrow, inside their blood cells. They don't want a movie that is quite this successful at transferring that all-consuming dread to them. And I think that's a very good way to put it, is that maybe some people don't like these movies because they are just...
It does seem to be the uphill battle that these thoughtful horror movies are facing.
And at the end, you haven't shot the bad guy and burned his mask and read the incantation that sends the demon back to hell. Like, there's no fucking wrap-up to a movie like this other than more depression and more, like, dread.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, fuckballs. Okay, things did not get better. So I can see that also. Maybe that's off-putting to a lot of folks. I happen to love that.
Yeah, that's definitely your... I mean, let's see, what was it? Pontypool, for instance, is kind of a good example of that. Yeah,
everything goes really poopy.
And all of the like psychological buildup in there. Yeah. What the hell is that one?
Even like the Stephen King, The Mist, the film version of The Mist.
I'm getting a better appreciation for these type of movies. I was on that too. I was like, no, man, give me the Freddy Krueger give me that. But I'm getting a little bit more on board with some of this stuff.
I love both, though. That's the thing. I mean, I'm going to rave just as much about a good slasher. So I don't know. Maybe it is just knowing ahead of time what you're going to get, or maybe it's any one of the other things we talked about.
I just want to know when the next big slasher is going to come out.
Not as What's long as it we keep be, remaking man. All the old ones.
Yeah, I know. I want something fresh and new.
Yeah. I think we've gotten some new slasher characters that could be awesome. You know, we got Hatchet, which I think is a really cool franchise. But The Collector, I really like those films. Those are good films. But people want to root and cheer for the guy that they already own a shirt for. It's hard to break new. Yeah, it's hard to break new ground right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think...
Which might also be some of it.
So what would you say was the last most successful franchise character? Was it Chucky? Is there something after that?
I would say Saw.
Saw? Yeah. Jigsaw.
I would say that's probably for a real franchise that really was quite successful. Or, not that there's really a character in it that you love, although I do like the acting and stuff, but The Conjuring, The Ed and...
Those are super successful.
Valak is probably getting popular, or was popular for a short time.
Maybe until she got her own movie.
Yeah.
Who?
Valak the Nun.
Valak. Yeah. That well, and that shows you right there how not based on anything lasting those films really are. First off, the first Conjuring was amazing. The second one was a little bit of a mess, but it held together well enough that I was like, I enjoyed that film. Mm-hmm. All of the offshoots are, to me, trash. The Annabelle, the Nun, I mean like lowest common denominator bad horror films.
But they filled a hole somewhere for a lot of people. Sure.
And the Nun has like a 13% right now.
I always believe that the
crap. So no one's liking it.
Yeah, no. But I always believe that the crap paves way for somebody else to come in and say, okay.
You've said that.
Now yeah. I've got something we can build upon or something that can
Yeah, because somebody sees that and they're like, oh, I can do better than that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, can you imagine if the next 10 movies we watched, we were all as impressed with as Hereditary? Like, every one of them, like, kind of shook us or blew our mind in a way, or where we went, whoa, I want to discuss this. And I went, oh, geez. It would sense to be awesome, or it would cease to be awesome really fast.
It would. It's kind of like where I am with the Marvel Universe. I'm like, these are all great movies. I'm fucking bored with Marvel Universe.
Do something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm completely the same.
We wouldn't be able to appreciate In the Hood if we hadn't had four other leprechauns.
God, that movie's so good.
And then he went back to the hood.
Yes, which we don't appreciate.
Back to the hood.
The hood.
Anyways.
Anyway, good one. Good one to wrap up on. Really nice. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, this was a really awesome film. I'm actually glad that all four of us kind of found something to like, because I was thinking this was going to be another one that...
We need to find a movie that we're 100% divided on and just bust balls for an hour.
We
got to
do a Rob Zombie movie.
I feel like that was
then.
Probably the last one.
No, I was going to say, let's do a Rob Zombie movie.
Yeah.
If you guys want Division, I'll
tell
you
right now. What was the last movie that you're talking about?
My Shark movie.
Oh, no. We all love that shit, man.
Oh, yeah, it was fun as crap.
Fuck yeah.
Super fun.
Yeah, no, I'll get behind a Rob Zombie movie that you hate.
I actually really enjoy some of his movies. Yeah. It's just there's
let's
some
do a
really
Rob
dope.
Zombie Halloween.
Oof.
We'll bring
friendships may be shattered.
We'll bring John Campbell back in too.
Devil's Rejects.
Yeah.
Oh, Devil's Rejects.
I love Devil's Rejects.
See, and that's probably my least favorite Rob Zombie movie of all. And then, I mean,
have you seen 31?
Oh, never mind. Yeah, I wiped that from my memory entirely.
I still never saw that. What was that newer Cannibal Green something?
Oh, Green Inferno.
I never watched that one yet.
That one's alright. Not that great.
Yeah, I thought Green Inferno was a big letdown for me.
Shall we wrap up?
So yeah, see, there's plenty of movies we could do that.
Look at all those letdowns.
We gotta find them.
So there you have it.
I guess that's it. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. Give these a chance. Don't be, because they do look so pretentious and so highbrow, and so often they are. But occasionally, the hype is there for a dang reason.
I think so. I think so with this one.
You know, you got to fight the contrarism. The contrarism is like rampant right now, just as a nation or a world or whatever you want to call it. Like, being against something is almost carries more street cred than being for something in these days.
You know,
when it comes to your own personal entertainment, go enjoy what you want to enjoy. Don't hate on it because you don't.
You got a lot of philosophies and theologies. You just start your own church. I'm empowered to actually make that happen for you. Okay. The Church of Aaron.
That sounds good.
Bring your disciples in.
Yeah. Put Paimon into my dog.
Instead of snakes, can we have Boston Terriers running around?
So I get riches.
Yeah.
I think so. That's
little
fair.
Bossies everywhere. Be great.
Absolutely. Well, anyways, I'm glad we liked it. This is a fun movie. It was fun to talk about.
It was.
Tell us we're wrong.
I dare you.
Yeah, fight me.
That's right. Go on to the Dread Fright Brooligans on the Facebooks and tell us why we're totally full of shit, or tell us why you liked it as well, or give us recommendations of something else to review. Give us a recommendation of a movie you don't think all four of us would like. I think at this point people know a little bit about each of us, so try to shake us up. We just want feedback. Give us feedback. We love it.
Yeah. We're whores that way.
Makes us feel like we're not lonely in the world. But thanks for tuning in, thanks for listening, and we will get back at you guys soon.
Peace.
Cheers.
Blue, ha, 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 ha.